Do they not know I'm half black? I'm half black from the belly button down. And just so that, just to show that that's squashed, here's a little present for my beautiful black female fans.
Yeah, we gonna talk about this pussy. You punk, you faggot, you hoe.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
What up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. This week's episode of the Corner is brought to you by Casper Mattresses. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. You know, me and Andreas are always covering events, we're always writing articles, but when we do have time to sleep, we lay our head down on a nice, pillowy, soft, premium mattress from Casper Mattresses. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and going straight to you. No showrooms, no middleman. Everyone's seen those creepy guys trying to follow you around the department store. None of that anymore. You get your hands on a nice premium mattress by going straight to Casper Mattresses.
Yeah, man. I mean, I got to get my rest. So Casper Mattresses is the goods. I'm telling you right now. So listen, you can get $50 off of any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/the corner and entering the promo code the corner. That's one word, the corner. That's Casper.com/the corner, promo code THECORNER. Terms and conditions apply.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another great episode of the Corner Podcast. Yeah, I'm tooting our own horn this week. As you know by now, Andreas Hale, Kel Dansby, shout out to the sponsors. Wrapped up that whole little intro real quick. It's a busy week, man. We have the press tour, Mayweather, McGregor. We're going to touch on all of that stuff. All 4 days of nonsense that they were talking. We'll score each day, too. Why not, right? Everyone's doing it on Twitter. Why not doing it on a podcast? But we also have other things to talk about, like UFC 213, a change to UFC 214 already. Hopefully, it doesn't go the way of UFC 213 in terms of injuries. We have WWE, great balls of fire to talk about, and the SummerSlam buildup that we're seeing. And plus, NXT has some dope stuff going on, and we have a women's tournament that just kicked off. So a lot of stuff to talk about today, a lot. But what took over the combat sports world? Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. It has me stupid tired already. Like, I was driving to the crib just now. I was texting at red lights. Don't text and drive, people. I was texting Andreas like, yo, I'm gonna be home in a second. And I just felt like I was honestly gonna fall asleep. Like, this is one of the most tiring weeks I've had in a long time. And it feels like this is just the pre-show. I can't imagine how tired I'm gonna be the week of August 26th. How are you holding up over there?
Yeah, this shit is exhausting, man. I can't imagine how those two feel. 4 days, four cities. They're like jet lag and having to, you know, neither of them are stand-up comedians, but, you know, they failed to come up with new material. Dana said it was going to be a shit show at the 213 press conference. So, yeah, this was a shit show. To be honest, I don't even know if this really helped at the end of the, like, the first two stops, they could have stopped there, but these last two were bad. Really.
Yeah. Even though today I thought it was a little bit better than yesterday, but anything's better than yesterday. Brooklyn was the worst stop. Technical difficulties. The crowd wasn't into it. McGregor bombed. And let's be real, the tour goes as McGregor goes.
Yeah.
And
McGregor
feeds off of the audience. So his performance, it's no wonder that he did well where the crowds were pro-McGregor. He feeds off of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, New York was tough because, I mean, starting an hour and a half late doesn't help either. Almost 2 hours late. Poor Dougie Fresh, felt really bad for him. He's trying to warm up a crowd that's already been overcooked, so that definitely didn't help matters any. But there's this interesting dynamic to this tour where Floyd has been very smart about one thing, and that's not making Conor McGregor not legitimate threat. He's making him a legitimate threat in conversation to the point where people that are dumb, that are on analysts on television, like, oh, you know, maybe there's chinks in the armor. Like, I think, I mean, don't get me wrong, Conor McGregor is the wittier of the two. But I feel like Floyd is doing his best to make Conor a credible threat so people will buy the pay-per-view. Like, I feel like he's holding back a little bit in terms of, because he could just drown him out in terms of how much he's made, competing in a boxing ring, like, he won't touch him. Like, he's just, when he gets asked these questions, he treats Conor like a legitimate threat. You know, Conor says he's going to knock him out inside of four rounds. People like Skip Bayless are the only fools who believe that. And Brendan Schaub, let me sidetrack real quick.
Oh, I knew that was coming.
Brendan Schaub has been terrible in terms of being, he sounds like an MMA homer. And
they are MMA homers. I haven't been watching on Showtime. I've been watching on FS2 every day. And that shit is the Conor McGregor show.
It's just, you know, Schaub saying, trying to tell Paulie Malignaggi how Conor can win this fight. And Paulie looking at him, and Paulie breaks it down because he's a fighter. You know, he's like, understanding space, how Floyd never really gives you the same look twice. Like, there was things he was, and Schaub was like, well, you know, he can hit him and he can knock him out. And I'm like, dude, this sounds so stupid. But this is how, like, a lot of people think. But this tour, it was bad.
I thought it was good. I mean, it did what it was supposed to do, which is drive attention to the fight. Now, it did so positively the first two stops. The last two, it did so negatively. But they always say there's no such thing as bad publicity. Every time I walked into the news station this morning, we don't even got a sports department. I'm the only one semi-interested in sports on the news station. And the 5 o'clock lead and 6 o'clock lead were highlights of the press conference.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, my story is on the front page of Yahoo right now about, you know, Floyd calling Conor the F word.
I wanted to talk about that, too, because I have not a problem. I'm spectacle about something. Like, I have a question.
Quizzical. Go ahead.
Why wasn't your Conor using racist remarks on the front page?
I don't have control of the front page. I'm not even sure.
Obviously. I'm posing the question on
so
the narrative in the background. And I don't know Yahoo people from, you know, from Tom, Dick, and Harry. Like, I don't know who's controlling that. Obviously, you just write your stories, submit them, and then they do what they do. But it's interesting how the narrative is being driven, and even to people like us who are in it, in which you gave two very good articles. No one can say that you aren't objective to the umpteenth degree. People crushed your article yesterday about, you know, the racist undertones and all that stuff. Fine. They might not react the same way, honestly, to Floyd using a derogatory term towards gays.
Oh, they have.
They have? Okay. Beans. Good shit by them. Let me not underestimate that then, because I thought, you know, a lot of people would be more tolerant of homophobia.
Well, I mean, what they're doing is actually, first of all, they're calling me like a liberal douchebag and saying that I'm too sensitive and that I might be gay because I said, you know, Floyd used a homophobic slur, which is ridiculous. But,
have to be gay to be fucking sensitive to gay people's feelings?
I'm just saying, like, I'll let you get back to your question. But the thing is, like, I'm just reporting what happened, right? And it just made a bad thing worse. That's all I'm saying. Like, Floyd didn't need to pull the attention back on himself. Like, he was actually turning the tide somewhat until now. So, anyway, continue.
So I saw that and I was like, yo, first thing in my mind popped up, boom, congrats. Andre's got the first page. That's dope. All this stuff. Read the article. And after I read it, and just, you know, to be honest, I thought yesterday's article was better. It is what it is. Neither were bad. Yesterday was better, right? And this is my logic. Your perspective on yesterday's is a perspective only you can bring. Obviously, from the stuff we talked about on podcasts, your history of standing up against racial intolerance, all this stuff, it's a passion inside of you. You're so knowledgeable. That article crushed it. Today, you reported on the gay slurs, but there's still there's no possible way you can have that level of depth without someone calling you gay, calling you a fag, you know, being racially or, excuse me, sexually intolerant towards you. It's just not that history built up inside of you, you know, that emotion built up inside of you. So obviously that didn't come across. So I was like, okay, cool. Like, you know what? But it's still a dope article. And I was like, why didn't they highlight his article yesterday like they're highlighting this one? Because they're both sensitive issues. They're both front page issues. But Conor says one and they say, okay, cool, whatever. Mayweather says the other and it's front page. One is against blacks, one is against gays. Like, I don't understand. I don't know where the disconnect comes and why one was deemed headline material and front page material and the other was not. You turned them both just as quick. I don't understand.
Well, there's two things that factor into this. And one of them is that the Yahoo's front page is a very quick turnover. My story could have very well been on the front page for a brief amount of time. Because the amount of comments it got probably suggests it was on the front page at some point. And then the one today, it's already off the front page. Aaron Judge is on the front page now. So there's a quick turnover to how these things go. Yahoo just moves very fast. It's timing. It's whatever else is going on. Because literally, like, there's nothing going on when I wrote my Mayweather-McGregor story today. Yesterday, I think there was, like, a few other Donald Trump stories floating around. So there's a lot of things. Like, right now, my Mayweather using a homophobic slur has, I'm looking at the page, 1,742 comments. It's been up for an hour. It's ridiculous. The other article, I'm not even sure, because I know Kevin's was on the front page too for a second. And I know that was at like 790 last night. So it's gotta be well over 1,000. So it's ridiculous, man. It's a lot going on, but it wasn't anything, that was predetermined. There was no like hidden agenda as far as I know. They both had their time.
Felt like, yo, is it just natural reaction? Is that just the narrative that's being painted? Regardless, for any reason, not that they're racist, not that they care more about gays than they do blacks or anything like that. It's just, in my mind, is the narrative to keep the story, Conor is the working man's fighter or he's the face, yada, 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 and Floyd is the heel. So let's highlight Floyd's heel tendencies and kind of coast a little bit. I mean, once again, it was going to get traction anyway. You just couldn't hide from the subject. It's just, are they still painting that narrative? Is it the Great White Hope narrative? Because we see all those memes and everyone's commenting on that. Are they sticking by the book? Is that the story that's being painted? Because no matter, all forms of journalism, all this stuff, there's always an angle. There's always a story you're trying to tell, a narrative. And I was just wondering, like, yo, is that the narrative being painted for this fight? Not just your outlet. This just happens to, you know, hit closer to home for the podcast. But in general, is that just the narrative people are telling? Like, are we so fast to want to rush past Conor's comments? And mainstream, too. Mainstream, to my knowledge, didn't focus on those.
Well, so
it was a touch and go.
Here's the other side of it. I've already been asked to write a story about, are we overlooking Conor's comments? And I was asked to do it last night. And I just didn't have time because I had other things going on after I wrote that article. So I'm actually writing a column for Yahoo today about Conor McGregor, race, and how this kind of, and we're, you know, there's a parallel that's Trump's America, like how this has become passable. So that is coming, but it's going to be far deeper and far more thought out than the two pieces I wrote today and yesterday. So there is a narrative there because, to be honest, you know, one of the editors and myself had a conversation yesterday about that, what you're saying. This narrative, you know, people are just kind of glazing over what Conor has said. And of course, it's gotten a lot of backlash. People say, you know, black folks are being too sensitive. You know, this is just how Conor is. Somebody told me the other day, you know, Conor's not racist. He's Irish. And I was like, what?
Ask the black British people how they've been treated and tell me racism doesn't fucking belong in Europe. Like, tell me that shit doesn't go on.
It's long story short, like the article, basically what I'm trying to say in this piece is there's a difference between being racist and being racially insensitive. And I don't think Conor McGregor is a racist. And I use the words I don't think because I really don't know. And for people, a lot of people like, he's not a racist. I'm like, you don't know. You honestly, you really don't know. Like, I've interviewed Conor a lot, and I don't know the man, so I don't really know how he feels. But he's definitely been tone deaf and racially insensitive to with the things that he has said. You know, and especially the way he handled it yesterday. It's like, you aren't around black people a lot, are you? Especially not American, African Americans. So, you know, the things that he has said, somebody needed to pull his coat on him the first time. Dana didn't. Nobody in his camp did either. So then he goes, whatever came into his head, because he was failing miserably yesterday in New York, then he decided to address them in front of, you know, in front of a New York crowd that has already been, you know, fed up with how long the shit took. And then he just poorly handled it. Does this make him a racist? I think sometimes that term is tossed around a little bit too liberally. Like, we really, like, there's a difference between somebody who is inherently racist and knows what they're doing versus somebody like Conor, who is maybe a little bit more apologetic for what he's done, but he doesn't really know how to handle himself.
Yeah.
Right? He's kind of grown up around people, and, you know, him and his friends would have been like, yeah, the Dancing Monkeys, Rocky III, and thought nothing of it because there was nobody there to say, hey, that's racist. Nobody told him that, so he just kept doing it.
But
so
FYI, like, that's a lot of the culture now.
Right, so
and
it's like,
there's an age gap. I'm even positive between when I went to school and when you went to school and what was racially tolerable. As far as making jokes, poking fun, little shit that you say. And I tell people this all the time. Like, yo, I have white friends, I have black friends, I have everything. And if someone's Jewish, you make fucking Jewish jokes. If someone's Mexican, you make Mexican jokes. And within your group, obviously this was on a public stage, it's completely different. But even then, like, the lines of what was even acceptable when I was in school were so much different than when you were in school. And it's so much different than the 80s when you get duffed out, you say anything. Because your parents literally just went through that shit. Like, and then now the line just keeps getting pushed back, back, and back to the point of you have people who are just ignorant. Like, they're just, and not purposefully ignorant, but ignorant to the fact that people still care about little shit like that. That it's not something to be joked about. That everything about it isn't, you know, like, it's not funny all the time. Like, sometimes you just say, oh, my bad. I'm sorry I offended you. Keep it moving. Like, don't, the jokes aren't what heals it. But to a lot of kids, this culture, this generation, the climate now, it really is. And that's to be said that only if you come from a place like Conor and you were broke and all that stuff, people will give you a pass, they'll make an excuse, you're good money. Because only the white kids I see getting away with that, and not going as far as, like, I'm not telling white kids to run around just saying nigga all the time, which is prevalent now. FYI. But I'm not saying that. That's still wild as shit. But there is, like, a culture of, yo, you had a struggle like me. You broke. I'm broke. Oh, we both from the hood. Cool. You can say a lot more shit than the rich aristocratic kid with the spoon in his mouth. And that's just how it is. So people look at Conor like, oh, he was broke in Ireland. A lot of people saying, oh, Conor's right. He loves black people. He was just on welfare. Like, welfare is a fucking black thing? Yes. Like, what do you mean? Like, but they're saying, like, yo, he knows struggle too. So he can say this wild shit, or he doesn't mean anything. He's not going to look down on you because he knows struggle and you struggle. So it's like, I understand that's a past that's going around a lot. And me growing up in New York, that's something you always realize, because people be like, oh, you can't say nigga unless you black. I'd be like, you haven't been to New York, because I grew up Puerto Rican. My whole family's Puerto Rican, all this stuff. You go to New York, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, granted, there were slaves down there. We don't got to go into history, but Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, blacks, anything except for you having white skin, you can kind of say nigga. Samoans do in Cali all the time and shit. So there's a definitely stark difference of the culture now and where that line is being blurred and how far you can push it. And I think Conor is a really big example of that, where he's part of that idea that, yo, I'm not racist, quote unquote. And you lose fact that it's still racially insensitive.
Yeah, I mean, and more importantly, you know, Conor hasn't really fought black fighters. He fought Marcus Brimage, but he's never been fought a black fighter on this stage.
No.
So it's, you know, you can get away, like, he got away with the Cholo shit with Nate Diaz. Like, he got away with that shit.
And the Brazilian shit, which was wildly disrespectful, but funny.
Right. So he got away with it. But on this stage, you got to be careful. And for Conor, you know, and the thing is, I had, you know, people, the dance boy and all that. I had more of a problem calling black people monkeys the Dancing Monkeys in Rocky III, because the only people in Apollo Creed's gym were black. So I had more of a problem with that statement than the dance boy. But they're both like, you got to be better than that. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
in which he tried to use son, I guess, a couple of times, which is different.
It's different, but it's like, come on, man. Like, Dana needs to be like, yo, Connor, you're not making this any better. And then, you know, the you know, being half black, like, that was stupid. That was, I mean, that was childish, moronic. Like, you
had a lot of his statements are. See, that's the difference. People expected Connor to be really mature in that situation. He's very thoughtful and calculated when it comes to his fight game. But in life, he always takes the jokey road. He always makes light of stupid shit that probably sometimes you shouldn't make light of. And he just did the same exact thing with race. Connor went Connor. People just expected something different. Like, you're not going to change because the stage gets bigger. It's going to magnify who you are. And that's all it did.
So, but the more important thing that's happening here, because it's not really it is a Connor versus Floyd thing, but, you know, you go back to the movie The Great White Hype, which a lot of people were starting to compare this fight to, and they compared it at the beginning. It's not really the fighters, it's the fans that make it like that. And when I wrote that article about what Connor said, if you read the comments, you see why Conor McGregor is their Great White Hype. It's not Conor making himself the Great White Hype. Conor's just being Conor. Conor's being the same Conor that I met before his second fight at the UFC offices several years ago. Nothing's really changed. But the people see Conor and they was like, I want to see Floyd Mayweather lose. Now, don't get me wrong. Floyd has his transgressions, too, that I absolutely don't agree with. There are things that he's done in his past that I'm absolutely against. But the narrative here is everybody wants to see Floyd lose. When Floyd talks shit, he needs to be humble. When Conor talks shit, he's fun. It's always this hidden narrative that's existing, and people are like, oh, you're too sensitive, but it's true. Black fighters, when they talk shit, like Tyron Woodley, who's a perfect example, he's told to sit down and be humble. He's told, don't ask for no money. It's like, be happy where you are, boy. But when Conor asks for a piece of the company, it's okay. It's cool. He's fun. But Conor just took a page out of both Floyd Mayweather and Muhammad Ali's book on his way to the top.
Oh, yeah.
He took pages out of black fighters, not white fighters, because name another white fighter that talks shit. Like, Ricky Hatton talked a little shit, you know, but Conor's like a different level of shit talker that we really haven't seen. You know, like Tito Ortiz, he talks shit. Fuck him. He's, you know, he's down with Trump. Fuck him. But ultimately this thing is going to have racial undertones. You can't avoid it. As much as you would like to say it's two rich people fighting, they're going to make a lot of money, it's not about them. It's about the fans.
Like, it's the perception. What they're putting out. It's the perception.
The people who are going to be fighting in Las Vegas, the real fights are going to be in the streets, in the crowd. Those are where the real fights are going to be happening.
Yo, we thought they looted last time when they just wrecked the Starbucks. Ain't got nothing on this.
No, this is about to be wild. So, going all the way back to bring it around. Yeah, this world tour was a good idea to promote the fight. The first two stops, they could have finished there and called it a night. These last two were bad. And I think there are a lot of people who are actually turned off from this fight. People who don't really watch boxing were like, impulse buyers. Because that's where it works at first. You know, I got nothing to do. It's August 26th. There's no football on. I'll buy the fight. Those people are the ones that are going to probably be like, fuck both of them. I'm not watching the fight.
You know what's crazy? I'd say that's wrong. Only because those people aren't watching the Showtime stream. They're not watching FS2. You know where they get it? They see it on ESPN. They see it on First Take. They see it on Undisputed. They see it on their local news. And guess what those places do? They clip that shit out.
But
they aren't getting fed this narrative. They don't know that even, sure, a lot of people, a good amount more people know because they heard it. But so much more, the super casual fans, they're still going to buy the fight. They're still intrigued. They have no clue what happened. I sat in the office all day today and listened to people ask stupid fucking questions. And I didn't even want to open my mouth because I didn't feel like correcting them all day. They're like, oh, so they're actually fighting? Like, there's no kicks? There's no headbutts? I'm just like, yo. And only because they saw the little portion on the news and they were still intrigued and they were trying to figure it out. And then someone else who was even you know, a little bit more informed, but still not informed at all, was trying to explain it to him. And I was like, yo, no one's ever going to hear about the race issues. No one's going to hear about any of that stuff. The super casual fans are still going to tune in because they have no clue. And the highlight packages don't show it. I saw Dana White's whole joint today because I like his series on UFC YouTube. The behind the scenes, Dana didn't show none of that shit.
But here's the caveat. Is while I agree, like, look, this fight's still going to sell a shit ton of pay-per-view buys. However, the casual fans that you're talking about don't watch that I'm talking about don't watch Undisputed. They don't watch Fox Sports 1. They're seeing all this shit on social media. Mm. And they're the ones that are going to be like, nah, I'm not going to waste $100 on this fight. Like, they may go to a party. Like, these are the people that go to the fight party but don't watch the fight.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That makes sense.
For social gatherings, they may be turned off by these two. They're going to be like feminist groups that don't buy Floyd Mayweather fights because they hate his guts.
Well, they said that the last time with Pacquiao when he kicked the females out, and the narrative was way bigger on his domestic violence last time.
Well, yeah, but it does affect the sales. Like, don't get me wrong, the number was great, but I guarantee you there's still a small group of people who aren't buying the fight.
Yeah. And I think just being in circulation and being a part of the consciousness, for right or for wrong, did nothing but good for this fight.
It's tricky. I think it did good. I think there was a small section of people who were turned off by these last two tours because they just weren't good. This was like bad Def Comedy Jam, like really bad. And the only thing that held up was like, I mean, because they said the same things over and over and over again. Floyd didn't sound any better. You know, like, I mean, how many times are we going to hear hard work, dedication, point to the easy work? Even more embarrassing. Even more embarrassing.
Yo, he's just not good, by the way.
Not anymore.
His trash talk, I'll explain that later. Go ahead.
But he's not as quick-witted as Connor. Like, he's a different kind of trash talker. But to get Steven Espinosa involved, I had also had a problem with.
Oh, I thought that was gold, though.
But here's your here's your executive vice president of Showtime Sports being called a bitch and a weasel on stage. while that's good for like clips or whatever or good entertainment, overall to have your vice president called a bitch by somebody who's not employed by your company does not look good. Like Espinosa didn't even, they should have made a decision to not even have him there because it's a shit show and it's a circus. He's not Dana White.
It shouldn't have been boxing structure. It should have been MMA structure.
Well, it's a boxing match, so they're going to do it their way.
And they messed up. They're so far behind the times that they try to meet somewhere in the middle and still messed up.
Yeah, but it's just like when you see because, you know, Espinosa, like, that's regal. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not, he's like, you know, a CEO of a Fortune 500 company that's not a boxer or a rapper or something like that. You shouldn't be up there getting called a bitch by a fighter. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's like too far. It almost devalues your company. Because it's just like, oh, yeah, Espinosa, fuck that bitch. Like, and it gives people license to disrespect him.
Yeah, because no one, the casuals, like you said, casuals don't know Steven Espinosa. This is their first introduction to him, and it's a horrible, first impression.
It looks bad. And as great as a job as Steven Espinosa, who is a very good guy, has done really for Showtime Sports, like, this is just a bad look. Because he can't even do anything. It's not like you can say, shut the fuck up, Connor. He can't say anything.
No, because then you make your company look bad. You got to be hyper-professional. In that moment. And Steven is super cool. He's, as far as like CEO, face of a company is concerned, he's crazy accessible.
Yeah, he is. He's very accessible. So, and it's like, I can DM on Twitter. Like, you know, it's just like right there.
Word. But, he like reads articles. Like he said, hey, great article to me, like several times. I'm like, oh shit, Steven Espinosa. Like he's so normal. He's definitely not what Connor called. So that's just out the window. So if there was something behind cutting the mics off or blah, 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 that someone else, he's obviously on stage. So the decision didn't necessarily come from him. And it's still, once again, overboard for something that was pretty simple in middle school.
Overall, like the world tour, it was great in terms of, you know, if you believe that bad publicity is good publicity, fine. It's on the front page. Everybody talked about it. I just think that there's some people that are just going to be kind of turned off by this whole thing because it wasn't their finest hour.
No, and I didn't like Floyd's trash talk, to kind of come back around to that.
It wasn't good.
To me, and even when I look back on his other trash talks, it was more of his theatrics than what he said that made him a good trash talker. Throughout history, wearing the sombrero and all this and bringing the stuff out with De La Hoya and Hatton, like, he did what Connor did. You kind of race bait, you attack cultures, but his was so preconceived And that's what I saw this time. Everything was scripted. His best press conference in Brooklyn had the DJ playing what he wanted at the right times. He had props. He had, like, everything is so scripted. And I said it on Twitter. He is the battle rapper that shows up with 64 bars written out already. And the other guy spitting off the dome. Like, that's who Floyd is. He doesn't have that off-the-hip wittiness. That you need in these type of situations. And it could go good, it could go bad, as we've seen in Conor, but that's what happens when you spit off the dope.
Yeah, that's true.
That's really what's happening in a nutshell. Today on Twitter, I forgot who it was. I think it was our dude Coleman, but I'm not exactly sure. I don't have my Twitter open. Asked if we'd be doing the Pacquiao treatment for this fight as far as podcasting. It was. What up, Greg? Shout out to Greg Coleman on Twitter. Yeah, the three shows in three nights. That was a marathon. Not only did we do three shows in three nights, we did them live.
Yeah, that was rough.
That was rough. But I'm going to go out on it.
You can get a guess. I can't do it. Like this, as much work as I'm going to have to do that week,
I can't see us do three shows. Yeah, like it's three shows, and that's so much. I feel like we might have to go to our normal show and maybe a quick join afterward. But then we got to write so much, depending on the outcome.
I mean, you know, shout out to anybody who listened to those shows. But, dog, I can't do it. I don't have the stamina.
I don't know. Crazy. I'm going to figure something out. Let me mess with everything. Maybe, listen, man, I don't know. This is 2017. We might live stream it, put the live stream up on YouTube, and you just going to let us, you know, watch us write and talk a little bit about the fight while writing. I don't know. That just might have to be the middle ground on this. We might have to have our own, like, little 24/7 special or something, you know, leading up to the fight. I do have all the equipment now from the station, so we might have to have a corner 24/7 going on. Just filming Andreas and I walking around and doing our thing. Maybe we put that out. That'll be our special thing for this fight. You guys get the behind the scenes of what we're doing. Big time over here. So outside of that, during the week, if anyone who listens to the show is coming out to Vegas for the fight, whether you get tickets or not, you just want to be part of that atmosphere. I had the brilliant idea to do a meetup because someone asked me the last time, like, yo, you guys having a meetup? It was randomly. It was like UFC 213. I was like, it's not even that big. But for anyone wanting to come out to the fight, and if you guys just want to hang out, Stage Door Bar, 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. Friday night before the fight, which is on Saturday. I'll be there having drinks. You guys are more than welcome. Just tweet me beforehand that you'll be showing up, and I'll clear out some space. If you guys never been to the Stage Door, it's on Flamingo Road in Las Vegas Boulevard. It's one of the, like, hush-hush, super cheap spots to get super drunk. I think you get, like, a beer and a shot for $3 in there. And Patron's, like, $3, too, if you guys are fancy. So, we could all get drunk, sleep it off the next morning, and get ready for a good fight. So, there you guys go. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we got to talk UFC and pro wrestling still. So you guys stay right there. We'll be right back. Listen up. Because we need help putting out the show that you love for free every week, giving it free to the people. Now we know nobody likes filling out surveys, but we really need you to do it. It won't take you more than 5 minutes, and besides helping out the show, you'll be entered for a chance to win a $100 iTunes gift card. You know what I can do with $100 on iTunes? I'm living life large on iTunes with that, and you guys get that just for helping us out. We know some of you may have already done surveys like this in the past, but we really need you to log in and fill this thing out as accurately as possible.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, once we know more about you, we'll be able to deliver the show and the sponsors you dream about. Finding sponsors who are a good fit means we're going to give you the deals and information, the brands you care about, while keeping this show free to enjoy every week. Free to enjoy every week. It means you don't have to pay to subscribe for nothing. All right. And if you don't care about helping us and making the show better, do it for the chance to win a free iTunes or Amazon.com gift card. Right? You know, like, do it for free. Do it for the gifts. If there's not, you know, just think about it. If there's not that many of you doing it, there's a better chance to win. So please, do us this solid and go to thecornersurvey.com. Once again, that's thecornersurvey.com. Do that. Keep the lights on for us. let us cater to what you need. You know, you can tell us what you like and what you don't like, and then we can keep it all funky and knock this thing out.
I know the Corner Club got our back. You guys are going to fill out that survey. We're going to get more ads. We're going to be bringing you this for free for a long, long time. So shout out to y'all. All right, we're back, and it's MMA time, like really MMA time, not just Dana and Connor. You know, that's what the world probably thinks MMA is at this point. So we got to talk UFC 213, because we were just there the past weekend. Shout out to UFC for sitting us next to each other. I expected, you know, the other lone black person to sit next to us, but it so happened to be that Rob from BSO was seated elsewhere, a couple seats down. And it moved over to sit next to us. So, yes, all the black people were right there, smack dab in the middle of the octagon again, just like the time I met Andres. So, black people, we crew up on Media Row. We did so again and enjoyed the fights, which I thought were a little bit better than I anticipated. We were both really down on the card last week when we talked about it on a podcast, and mainly because Amanda Nunes dropped out of the fight. So last week, I think we previewed it with Nunez still in the fight.
Yeah, because she didn't drop out until the morning.
Yeah, until the morning of. So then we found that out, and we're like, oh, shit, great. No backup plan in place. The fight was scratched. I didn't miss it, personally. I didn't miss out on the fight. They rescheduled it. Cool. It's going to be a co-main event, according to Dana. He says no more main events for the women bantamweight, which is just a lie. He says this shit all the time off the hip. So that's a lie. Don't believe that. Because if, you know, Mackenzie Dern ends up being the next big thing and she wants to fight at 135, trust me, he'll put her ass as a headliner. So he just means Amanda Nunes. Yeah, I wasn't rocking with you too much anyway. Now I have an excuse not to have you main event one of my pay-per-views.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much what it looked. I did miss the fight. I thought 213 was already kind of shitty. It just, in terms of star power, it just lost a lot. And International Fight Week is cursed.
3 years in a row.
Yeah, you know, and fortunately, Conor McGregor stayed on to fight Chad Mendes, and we would have lost a third main event. But this card was just like, it was there. It was cool. It reminded me of the card where John Jones fought Ovince St. Preux, where it was like,
ooh,
all right.
Was that bad, though?
Yeah, I mean, Whitaker Romero was good, but to be honest, I'm sitting there and I don't remember anything else on 213. And maybe that's just me being forgetful.
I might be lumping both days together. So, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, look, first things first, before anything else, Justin Gaethje is what rescued that entire weekend.
The entire weekend. And as soon as Cowboy dropped out, I said, move that fight to the main card. It'll steal the show. They did not, and it stole Friday night.
I mean, everybody knew this was probably going to be the best fight. And boy, that shit did deliver. And there were a lot of people that were on my time like, who is this guy? And I'm like, yo, I told y'all. Like, yo.
To be fair, we were forced for work purposes to go to damn near every World Series of Fighting because they're based here in Vegas. So we saw a lot more Justin Gaethje than most.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I saw his fights with Palomino. I mean, the guy I don't know what you can call him because he gets rocked.
He's
every
a zombie.
Single. Yo, people thought he was cooked after he got hit by Johnson. And you know, I kind of sat there and I was like, oh, and I was like, he'll be fine. I can't remember who was next to me. It might have been like Jose or somebody. I said, he'll be fine. And he recovered. And then he got rocked again. I was like, oh, he'll be all right. And then once he was in the fight, like once you rock him, if you're unable to finish him, you're done. That's pretty much a wrap.
Because you take all your energy to try to finish him. And he's just not enough.
And the thing about Justin Gaethje is he fights the same way whether he gets rocked or not. So he's always coming forward, he's always throwing leg kicks, and he's throwing hands at you. So it's like he just wears you down. And Michael Johnson just couldn't take it. So that salvaged the entire weekend.
Yeah, he took Michael Johnson's soul in that fight. Because Michael Johnson threw everything at him and then looked at him like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, like he's still here. He's still here, and he's, like, coming at me. Because it's not like he gets rocked. The thing that Gaethje does better than anybody in MMA, is he gets rocked, and then he plows forward. So you're at, in a way, he's smothering your punches, and then you're confused. You're like, why the fuck? I just hit this guy everything I had, and he's still coming at me, winging punches. Somebody's going to put Justin Gaethje to sleep. It's inevitable. It's going to happen.
And he welcomes it. That's the craziest part.
He doesn't care that he's undefeated, and that zero means nothing to him.
Nope. He'd rather get knocked out in a fight, out cold, than go 25 minutes and win a split decision.
Yeah, that's he doesn't fight for you. He doesn't fight for your consciousness. He doesn't fight to say, like, he's the absolute opposite of a Floyd Mayweather. He's not here to win on points. He's not here to figure out, you know what, if I do this for three rounds and I make these adjustments, it's like, fuck that. I'm going to get hit. He's going to hit me. Somebody going to sleep. No, I just happen to be a better striker than most people.
So, dude, lightweights, watch out. Yeah, they've booked Justin Gaethje versus Eddie Alvarez. I was down on it at first. I'm not down on the fight. Like, I want to see Gaethje and Eddie Alvarez. They're going to be coaches on The Ultimate Fighter. My problem with this initially was it means we got to wait almost like 6-7 months to see Justin Gaethje fight again.
Well, November, end of November.
December, yeah. Wasn't it?
It's always last week of November, first week of December. So one year is December 5th, 1 year is November 30th.
So about 5 months, we got to wait to see Justin Gaethje fight.
Yo, he kind of needs that shit. Let him regain his faculties.
Yeah, that's the thing is, you got to kind of save Justin Gaethje from himself. Because if you allow him to, he'll kind of Cowboy Cerrone it and just keep jumping back in the cage to make more money. So you put him on The Ultimate Fighter, you let him coach, you build up towards this fight with Eddie Alvarez, who I think he's going to demolish, and you have them fight, you know, early December, like at that.
But that's a good test. A guy who was a champion a year ago. Granted, we see him, you know, since the Conor thing, he hasn't necessarily looked the same, but still, he was just champion. And it's a dream fight from people who saw Bellator, World Series of Fighting, UFC. Like, at a time, people thought, oh, these two champions from these other two promotions can compete in the UFC and do it. These guys are amazing. And this was one of those dream matchups we thought we'd never see because they were obviously in Bellator and World Series. It's great to see it play out in the UFC.
Yeah, so I can't wait to see it. I kind of wanted to see Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier go at it again because of the way that fight ended. But it is what it is. But more importantly, with Conor McGregor out, you kind of need this buffer, and it helps Justin Gaethje because if Justin does as I expect him to do and wrecks Eddie Alvarez, he'll be in prime position to either fight Tony Ferguson. If Khabib's fighting Conor and you put Justin against – well, I'm sure Tony will have a fight before then. God knows who against who. But it puts him in prime position to be like one or two fights away from a title shot without having to be forced out. And it keeps him visible by being on The Ultimate Fighter. I don't know how he's going to be as a personality, as a coach, but I'm here for it, man. I was down on it because I wanted to see him fight Tony Ferguson, but I think I was getting ahead of myself. Like Edson Barbosa, I want to see him fight everybody. But it is what it is. I'm cool with it. Kevin Lee's around. Maybe Kevin Lee fights Edson Barbosa next. There's just – that lightweight division is just so stacked. But fortunately, that's the fight we got this weekend. That was amazing. The rest of the card, with the exception of Romero and Whitaker, which was a pretty damn good fight. I mean, Travis Hopper-Brown, you know, you and Ronda.
It's time to make babies.
Yeah, call it a night because both of y'all are cooked.
That's it. What is this, 4 straight knockouts? Knockout losses by him?
Looking like Andre Arlovsky these days, right? Like, he's just getting beat up.
4 straight and in 5 of his last 6.
It's time to go, man. It's over. It's over for Travis Brown. And what's crazy is, once upon a time, Travis Brown looked like he was going to destroy everybody because he killed Gabriel Gonzaga. He killed Stefan Struve. He just looked like that guy. And then it was like, no, you're not.
And like, yo, too bad. Heavyweights, life comes at you fast, man.
I mean, look, Overeem and Fabricio Werdum, that wasn't even fun to watch. I was, what the hell is this? Like, Werdum fought, he did exactly what I thought he was going to do. And somehow, Overeem did knock him out because he was tentative as hell.
Yeah, but, I mean, Reem, to me, Reem, he's a completely different Reem. And to say he might be better like this because he's a little less risky, but look at it, just his physique. TRT Reem is completely different than this Reem. It just is. But it happens to lend himself to taking less chances, and he can kind of win more fights this way.
Well, he won't, because if, you know, if he goes up against another top five heavyweight, maybe he fights Derek Lewis. I don't know. Maybe with Derek. I mean, it's just the fact that if Overeem gets touched, he's going to get slept. And Fabricio Werdum convinced himself that he was a striker and fought most of that fight on his feet. And then when he hurt Werdum, because he's not a striker, he didn't know how to finish him. And then he went for the takedown. It was just like the worst strategy ever. So he deserved to lose. He absolutely deserved to lose that fight.
Man, Rob Font had to finish, which was good. The only finish on the main card. That tells you all you need to know about the main, the pay-per-view card.
There was one finish. It was a long night. Now, quickly before we go into pro wrestling, Robert Whittaker's a champ. He's the interim champ. This is something that you could have told me 2 years ago, and I'd be like, get the fuck out of here. Robert Whittaker, because first of all, he was a welterweight getting knocked out by Wonderboy, and now he's the interim middleweight champion of the world. Who's going to fight Bisping next, probably? Because I don't trust anything.
To be fair, I think Wonderboy could be middleweight champion of the world.
I agree.
If he wanted to try.
The point is, Robert Whittaker is probably going to be the UFC middleweight champion before the end of the year. If he gets his hands on Bisping, he knocks out Bisping.
It's a race to see who gets their hands on Bisping. And I think he just won that lottery.
Dude, if you look at the middleweight division about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, Luke Rockhold, Chris Weidman, Jacare, Romero, nowhere in this conversation was Robert Whittaker.
Yo, if Rockhold decides he ever wants to fight again, I would take him against both champions currently. But I'm not sure which one we get, to be honest. But, I mean, I would take him against either one.
Like if there's anybody that's listening to this show that says, I knew Robert Whittaker was going to be champion, please add me. Please. Because I need to know how you knew this. Because this is the most, to me, this is one of the most bizarre things. Think about all the champions we had. Conor McGregor, people were like, oh, you know, he talks a big game, but I don't know. But he had something. And, Jose Aldo, obviously everybody knew. TJ Dillashaw was a surprise because nobody saw him beating Henan Burrell at that time. But Robert Whittaker? Like, Robert Whittaker is the interim champ. This is crazy. And then he looked great doing it. His takedown defense was unbelievable.
Bingo. That's what it was. And shout out to the little UFC breakdown on YouTube, which I always like watching for these big fights. And they said top three all time in the UFC's history in takedown defense. And
but it's crazy. It's crazy because he hadn't fought anybody that really tried to take him down. Like I said, Wonderboy, that's not a guy that's going to take you down.
But his athleticism is just bananas. Like, if you do try to, he's like a break dancer.
That's crazy. Yeah, hit the sprawl, the hips, man. It was a remarkable showing. Yoel Romero, I still want him to fight Bisping and kick his ass. So
ripping up the Cuban flag.
Yeah.
So Bisping's, perfect.
It's like a different level of shit talking for Michael Bisping. Like, when he stepped in the cage, it was like he threw the belt down. I thought it was corny. But then, like, him ripping up the Cuban flag, I was like, remind me of Bernard Hopkins throwing down the flag on Tito Trinidad. It's really disrespectful.
By the way, Ultimate Fighter finale is penciled in for December 1st, 2017. That makes you feel better. The Gaethje.
Okay. All right. Well,
It seems like we have a lot of Las Vegas cards. I'm trying to get ready and see. I don't know why UFC 216 is pegged for Las Vegas, T-Mobile, October 7th. I didn't know we had another
one. Which will likely, I don't know, October? Which will likely be, I'm going to say that we're going to get Garbrandt Dillashaw.
I'm not mad at that. That's a long way to wait, but I'm not mad. And can we throw Joanna on that card versus Thug Rose?
Probably. I mean, if this is the numbered pay-per-view
But Joanna wants to fight in New York, so.
Yeah, she'll probably end up on the New York card.
Yeah.
Like
in Madison Square Garden. Stop robbing us.
I mean, DJ will probably, I don't know. Well, we'll see what happens in Vegas. We got a lot of time to speculate about that.
Yeah. I don't want to see a DJ fight here if I could avoid it. So that's the UFC talk for this week. It's kind of a light week, even though we had a pay-per-view. They have an event coming up. We have Nelson Gunner. So, Glasgow, Scotland. I'm sure Connor will be there to support Gunny tomorrow.
Yeah, sure of it.
That'll be dope. See if Gunner Nelson can, pull out another W. And this is kind of just a placeholder, because after that, we get the Long Island card, which is dope, because it's all New York fighters, which means we actually get some really good fights. And then we get Jones Cormier, which is going to be, you want to see a shit show. That's the next shit show. Yeah, John Jones, if you guys haven't checked it out, there's an article floating around, I'm not sure, is it Bleacher Report?
Yeah, it's Bleacher
Report. Bleacher Report, where he's just lawless in his talk. And man, that guy loves cocaine. Yeah, what can I say? He's proud of it.
No turning back now.
Hey, a little yayo never killed nobody. Or according to John Jones, don't tell him. So that's MMA this week. Next week, we'll kind of get into the upcoming cards and preview anything you guys want to hear about. Right now, we're going to take another break. Right after we come back, we're talking WWE. Andreas has to talk about Great Balls of Fire. The inaugural. So it might be coming back. I know he's excited about that. And everything else in the world of pro wrestling. So stay tuned. All right, everybody. Before we continue to talk more combat sports, we got to give another thanks to Casper Mattresses. Casper Mattresses combine two technologies, springing latex foam and supportive memory foam, to create an award-winning sleep surface. Have y'all ever slept on memory foam? It's like floating on air. It's that great. And this is how we get our sleep. So you guys make sure that you check it out. Casper Mattresses are made in the USA and have free shipping and returns to the US and Canada. Shout out to the Great North. You can buy your Casper mattress easy online, and it's completely risk-free.
Look, dude, you spend like a third of your life sleeping, and Casper understands the importance of trying out a mattress before you commit. Look, so if you aren't satisfied with the Casper mattress, you got a 100-day period. Yeah, that's right, 100 days. You know, like 100 days of sleeping? By about that time, I think I know if I like my mattress. So get a Casper mattress for $500 for a twin or $950 for a king size. And you can save an additional $50 towards your Casper mattress by going to Casper.com/the corner and entering the promo code The Corner. That's Casper.com/the corner. Promo code.
We're back. It's wrestling time. A lot to talk about. Between the break, we were talking about the cancellation of Talking Smack, which I actually found pretty dope as a show. So that sucks that that's going to be gone. I thought that added a nice little twist to SmackDown. Cruiserweights will get a little bit more of a profile. But I don't know. Maybe they're making room on the network. Maybe we get a weekly, you know, European wrestling show where we can actually see great builds to these European championship matches that have been dope. Maybe they're making way for, you know, the women's tournament. There's just not enough bandwidth, I guess. They don't want to overflood the market with wrestling, which they're already doing. So maybe they're just clearing space. Who knows? But Talking Smack was dope. So rest in peace, Talking Smack. Hopefully he comes back like The Undertaker. What else is happening in World Pro Wrestling? Oh, Great Balls of Fire. What the hell am I doing? Great Balls of Fire. First off, I'm going to skip right to the end. We're going to work backwards. Joe Lesnar, and I told you I'll explain this because we were talking. I was busy and shit. You're messing with me on Twitter. So, the way I wanted that to read, in which I guess I read it, and I was like, I'm not sure if it reads this way. The way I wanted that tweet to read was, I think this is Joe's best showing in a match.
How the hell did you get Lesnar confused with Joe?
Or excuse me, Lesnar. No, this is Lesnar's best showing in a match the past 10 years because I thought he honestly gave way to Samoa Joe. And to the point of he let Samoa Joe dictate the pace of the match, the next move, the sequencing. He took a huge bump to start off the match. And it wasn't like a rest hold. It wasn't like a rest break bump like he did in the Rollins triple threat versus Cena where he disappeared for 20 minutes. He was like, yo, I'm just collecting a check. So you can jump through a table onto me and then I'm going to just chill out here for the rest of the fucking match. It wasn't him just murdering people like him versus Cena. This and Lesnar Punk were his best two matches. Lesnar Punk was obviously a lot longer, so they told a good story. So I can see that, but I never thought Punk really, I don't know. Punk physically wasn't imposing enough to give me that feeling that I had watching Joe versus Lesnar. And I knew the whole time. It's one of those where it's like, I know Joe's not going to win. I know Joe's not going to win. But holy shit, Joe might win. Like Joe just had that great of a performance. They told that good of a story in 6 minutes. To the point of it should have took a couple more finishers to finish Joe off. I hate that. But as soon as I saw him only take one and he was out, I was like, oh, it's not over. Like, Joe finally worked his way into the main event picture, and Vince can't deny this shit, and we're going to get it again at SummerSlam in some form or fashion.
Yeah, see, I still disagree with you. I, like, For one, this was all Joe. This is all Joe's doing.
Okay, maybe I'm giving Lesnar too much credit for, you know, letting Joe carry him. How about I say he let Joe carry the match. He let Joe do the pacing, and he had that little slick move where he kind of showed some athleticism, went through Joe's leg, and then suplexed. Like, there were some transitions. There was some psychology. When was the last time we saw that shit out of Lesnar? When it wasn't suplex, suplex, F5, repeat. There was some psychology in this match. I really liked Lesnar just giving that opportunity to Joe.
So the thing is that everybody knew Joe was going to lose, right? It was just a matter of how. And Joe, who has carried this entire program, he's the only person who you look at and go, yeah, he might be able to fuck up Brock Lesnar. That was like the thing is when you see Joe and you watch how he physically is. So everything made sense from that perspective. Like the assault in the beginning, slamming him through the table, all that made sense. But my problem was like about the rest hold, like there was like a chokehold rest hold. And I'm like, this is setting, like they used the Kikina clutch as a rest hold. And and I also had a problem with it because it was telegraphing how he was going to F5 Joe, right? Like the Kikina clutch wasn't on from the rear. It was like kind of sideways so Brock could pick him up. So the whole time I'm watching the match, I'm like, Brock's just going to F5 him out of this shit. Like, it's coming eventually. And 6 minutes later, it happens. So, yeah, it was one of Brock's better matches in recent memory. But it's like you look at Brock versus Undertaker, Hell in a Cell.
I thought, Hell in a Cell? Okay.
Yeah, it's like you look at Brock versus Cena Extreme Rules, not when Cena got bodied, but the first one. Or you look at Brock Punk, obviously. I mean,
those four. Okay, I'll give it to you. Those are definitely his best four. And I just thought Taker was Taker. You know, it was of Taker.
But, you know, Brock allowed Taker to get his shit in, and it was fun. Like, there were fun things. Like, this match wasn't bad. This match wasn't bad, but it was just really really awesome Samoa Joe. I just wish it would have went longer, and I had a problem with him only eating one F5 for the finish. More importantly, the fact that I have a little bit of concern now and trepidation now that they're putting Joe and Reigns in a match to see who goes to SummerSlam. Like, the rematch should just be inevitable. Joe saved the promo on Raw. Because, like, Lesnar and Reigns going back and forth was pathetic until Joe came out there. And,
well, Lesnar did have some funny-ass lines.
Lesnar, you know, when he speaks occasionally, he'll have some funny lines. But with Reigns in there, which we'll talk about in a second, it just felt weird. Like, you have unfinished business. Why are you trying to deal with Lesnar? Which I hope they figure this out next week. But 6 minutes, Joe has been one of those guys who showed up on the roster, like we said about AJ Styles last week. Showed up on the roster and was like, oh, yeah, we'll plug him in. We'll see how it works. And then he's a much better hand than anybody expected. Mm-hmm. Because he's not just here to put guys over. People were chanting for Joe at the pay-per-view. People were chanting for Joe on Raw.
That was the case with all the indie guys they've given a chance to, right? And it's all been mistakenly. Finn gets injured. They're scrambling. Yo, who can carry this just for a quick second until we figure out what's going on? Yo, Kevin can do it. All right, yo, throw Kevin in there. Kevin Owens goes. He doesn't drop the title for months. AJ Styles, hey, we're scrambling. Who can do it? You know what? Let's see if AJ can do this. Cena's about to go on vacation. Who can carry it? All right, we'll give AJ a shot. He's been doing some good work. Boom, AJ's into it. AJ carries a belt. Like, they've had to brick out to luck into these situations.
And yet and still, we still have Jinder Mahal and Randy Orton headlining a SmackDown.
Punjabi prison match. It's back, baby.
Hey, we'll talk about that in a minute. But back to Great Balls of Fire. Yeah, the main event, you know, it was 6 minutes. It started with like 5 minutes left in the pay-per-view, so you already knew the match was going to be short. It was a little frustrating. It was almost one of those times where you would have said, you know what, they could have put that match on before Strowman and Reigns because it was telegraphing how short the match was going to be.
Correct.
But
and Strowman and Reigns wouldn't have felt as ridiculous if it was last.
Yeah, so like, this whole pay-per-view felt like one of those old WCW things where they just timed everything poorly. Because Finn Balor not being in this card at all was crazy.
Makes no damn sense.
Granted, he was in a few with Elias Samson, which nobody cared about. But
Finn Balor. Which blew off on Raw.
Which was terrible. And, I mean, not that anybody really wanted to see it, but they told us that R-Truth and Goldust were fighting at this pay-per-view, too. And that didn't happen.
But they gave us all this time for Braun Strowman and Reigns after the ambulance thing, which we're about to talk about. And in the middle of all that, they threw out Heath Slater and Curt Hawkins. Like, I was just really baffled by how the pacing was for this pay-per-view.
This thing and says Heath Slater defeats Curt Hawkins. I didn't even see the fight. I didn't see the finish.
I don't think anybody did, except for the people who were in the arena who were just as confused as we were. So, all right, so let's talk about Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns. Now, I predicted that Reigns would win because you can lose this match and not necessarily look bad. I got the lose this match and not necessarily look bad right. I got the winner wrong. Because Reigns, he went rabbit season, duck season, like somebody said on in an article, and Roman dove into the ambulance like an idiot. And yeah, it made Roman not look like a loser, and then he could come out and beat the hell out of Strowman and do that whole ridiculous ambulance scene. So, Kel, I'm going to ask you. We've discussed this in great lengths about the double turn, how it felt like the momentum was for Strowman. What did you think about this whole ambulance thing? Was this the way it was handled? Was it smart?
It's okay. It's smart if they do the right thing. And the right thing isn't to take the easy way out on Monday and have Strowman come and wreck both Samoa Joe and Roman Reigns and turn this stupid SummerSlam match into a fatal four-way. That is the easy way out. That shit is stupid. What is good is to have Strowman come out and attack just Reigns. And they have a Hell in a Cell match or something super dope. And let Joe go at it one more time one-on-one with Lesnar. And let Joe win because of it. Because then Strowman can look strong again. Strowman attacks both of them, it is meaningless. And it's just another meaningless four-way. Strowman comes out, costs Reigns the match, and then wrecks Reigns the same way Reigns did him. Now Strowman looks strong again. And it's not just Reigns looking strong and blowing it off. And then in a four-way, you really can't have Strowman get his revenge. It's just a big-ass waste of Strowman. You pretty much built Strowman up for Reigns to crush it, which is the Vince MO. Hopefully, he does what's right. I have zero faith in this. But I'm okay with it if it means another one-on-one match. That's the only way this makes sense.
Like, I feel like it's trending towards a four-way match at SummerSlam. Oh, it's trending that way.
It's so easy.
Yeah, and you can hide a lot of people in a four-way match. Like, Lesnar can hide the entire match. And it kind of teases the Strowman-Lesnar feud. Like, I know why they'll try to do it, but it just feels so much better if they do, like, Strowman-Reigns Hell in the Cell and Lesnar and Joe in like a street fight or something crazy. I don't know what it would be. Just it feels like though both of those feuds are built for stipulation matches, right? Yeah. Like both of them need to have some kind of stipulation where somebody's got to die. Last man standing. We already did that with Asuka, so you can do it if you really wanted to, but I don't know. It'd actually be kind of fun to see Joe and Lesnar in the last man standing match. Unfortunately, Joe will probably lose, but that's the route that they should go. But they're
not. I'd like a submission match if possible.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm down with that. That could work because Brock's never going to tap out anyway.
He's just going to pass the fuck out.
Yeah, right, and he'll probably try to put Joe in a Kimura and rip his arm off. but it just feels like they had an opportunity here going into Monday night where you already had the double turn in process because there's nothing more babyface you can do than walk out of an ambulance that just got damn near destroyed on your own feet. And then, like, walk back to the lagoon you came from.
Yeah,
like,
and refuse nobody, medical attention.
Yeah, like, I don't know where the hell Strowman was going, but I just only can think that he went to, like, a lagoon, a cave, like, and he walked into, like, a meteor shower. Like, he just disappeared and wasn't heard from again.
That's like that he wasn't on this episode of Raw, though.
See, and I'm cool with that.
It's fine if they do it right.
But they won't. Like, in all honesty, Roman Reigns is going to be back to the babyface, and Strowman will still get the pop, but they'll still treat him like a heel. So maybe the turn will be extended. I just feel like if you can't end this feud without Strowman being a babyface. I don't know how you get out of this.
Because he has to be a babyface against Lesnar, if he goes against Lesnar, right? Like, I don't understand.
Nah,
you're just
really going
to have giant heel versus giant heel?
Look. Lesnar, I don't know what Lesnar is. Like, the fact that Lesnar says, you're not owed shit on live television, I'm like, yo, he just does what he wants. So,
okay. It's ambiguous.
He's babyface heel ambiguous. Like, nobody knows what that's good. He shows up. Like, Paul Heyman's the babyface, right? Like, he's like
he
the babyface.
Is, and that's the craziest dynamic, is that Heyman is so over, and he's such a babyface, but he has the supposedly the beast and the heeliest of clients. And I just don't feel like Lesnar's a heel anymore.
Yeah, he's just like a guy. And he's a guy who comes and beats the shit out of people and leaves. It's the gimmick is old. There's my problem with Lesnar is I'm tired of the same thing. Like, Joe was great because Joe did other things, but it was like, yo, man, like, all right, German suplexes were cool when you destroyed Cena with it, but wasn't that like 3 years ago? Like, dog, we gotta do some more stuff.
Normal
like,
suplex?
Yeah, normal suplex. Yeah, I mean, just do a body slam. Can we do a body slam? You know, a clothesline. Like, yo, there's a...
Yo, I can't remember, he hits a clothesline, everyone's losing their mind.
I don't know if you remember. There's a Raw episode a while ago, and somebody will tell me what this is. Where somebody's trying to run away from Brock Lesnar, and Brock Lesnar rolls out of the ring and clotheslines the life out of whoever it was that was running away from him. I can't remember what it was, but he like his clothesline used to be brutal. Like if anybody played the SmackDown video games, like Lesnar had his own clothesline where he just completely beheaded his opponent. So I just need to see more moves, Brock. I know you doing a little for a lot, but come on, man. You got to give us more, especially against Joe. Joe deserves better. I thought he was going to muscle buster him for a moment, but then I was like, Brock ain't taking that bump.
Oh, so, that'd be so dope, though.
It would be, but Brock ain't taking that bump.
Nah, Brock's not fucked.
There's no way. So anyway, yeah.
Imagine him injuring Brock Lesnar. That'll be the end of Samoa Joe.
Yeah, but it would be fun.
Other stuff on the card, Neville versus Tozawa on the pre-show was actually pretty good, I thought. But Neville hasn't had a bad match in a long time.
Yeah, he's just really good.
Bray Wyatt versus Seth Rollins.
Totally yeah. Pointless feud.
I don't care. Bray Wyatt, and he wins the next night on Raw. JoJo got that fire. That's all I'm going to say. JoJo got that fire.
I just don't understand. All right. Why were they feuding?
It doesn't matter. Listen, man, you got exposed for having a side chick. I got exposed for having a side chick. It's battle of the side chick masters. I don't know what to say. They should have got a little trophy, like a little pimp cup at that. Like, I don't know. There was a side chick battle.
Like he just beat the guy who's a cover athlete for WWE 2K18 twice.
Yeah.
But for no reason, really. Like Bray wins matches that don't matter.
He does. It didn't help him much.
No.
I think they're just going to reset it. Hopefully this means Bray versus Finn. I don't know. Finn got to do something now because they just blew off his last feud. Rollins somehow is in the IC title picture.
Yo, the teasing this fake shit. Like, the Shield reunion is one of those things I don't want. Now I what? Like I look
I'd
at
still them, lose my mind for a Shield reunion. Like a legit-ass Shield reunion.
Nope, not these three characters. Not the three characters as they are right now. One, I'm sick of Dean Ambrose. If Dean Ambrose is continuing to feud with The Miz, I'm out. I'm done. And, you know, he just hasn't been good lately. Rollins,
he's not a face. Ambrose has to be a heel.
Yeah, but that's the problem. Rollins has been stuck in this purgatory where he continues to apologize for his previous actions, right? When he was a heel. Like, he still apologized. I gave my soul to the corp. Like, yo, cut it out. Just be a baby face and go. And Reigns, nobody likes him. So the best way they could go this route is for the Shield to be a heel faction again.
But
they're not going to do it, right? Like, but I don't want to see the Shield as a baby face faction. That's just something I don't want any part of. There's no momentum there. Like, even if Reigns jumped in...
Like, they weren't supposed to be a babyface faction at first, right? They were just heels and then kind of grew into it.
But see, it's one of those things, like, when DX reunites, you can't avoid them being babyfaces because people are going to pop. The Shield reunites, people are going to pop. But then, when you really look at it, the Shield were never really a babyface faction. They were a heel faction. And that's where they thrive. So, the teases on Raw, I'm like, I don't want to see that shit. Especially if they're going to reunite the Shield for, like, The Miz and Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas, I'm cool. The Shield, if they were ever going to reunite, would be to kill Brock Lesnar. That's it. That's the only reason they should ever reunite.
Then Roman Reigns will take the title.
Well, exactly. There you have your problem. So there's always going to be a problem with this because Reigns is always going to be your focal point. But that's the only reason the Shield should ever reunite is to murder. I'm not talking about like just beat him. I'm talking about like murder Brock Lesnar. So there's that.
It's a damn shame. Come on. No need for that. Big Cass killing Enzo Amore.
What? Okay.
Cass's entrance music is the wackest shit I've heard in years.
That's like creator wrestler number three.
Yo, the CF
like,
Dollar people couldn't have done that. Nah. That, I refuse to believe they did that.
I'm going to go back to like WWE 2K14, and I'm going to just pick creator wrestler number four's theme music, and I'm pretty sure it's Big Cass.
You can create the entire character Big Cass looks like now. Generic-ass black trunks.
That's bad.
Some black wristbats. And black boots. Long-haired white dude, generic music.
And they hire him, they bring him in just to, you know, they're bringing in the Big Show just to put Cass over. Like, they always bring the Big Show to make somebody look legit.
Especially for Big.
For Enzo to come in and give that promo, that was pointless, because then he got murdered by Big Cass. So where does Enzo go from here? This is all dumb. I hated every minute of it.
I don't know. It's a grand setup for a grand failing for Cass, so they can get back together and finally have the title run that they should have had initially. Yeah. Cesaro and Sheamus. Cesaro and Sheamus versus the Hardys. Are we getting closer to the broken gimmick? I feel like it's coming.
I feel like they're going to have them lose until they become broken.
I love that, by the way.
I think that's the only way you can kind of do it. Like, you keep having them lose. And then, now the Revival will probably murder them too. So,
top guys in the building. And fuck the Revival. The Movement is one of the best things on Twitter. Yeah. I'm not a Cody Rhodes fan, but the fact that he says this shit all the time. He won the ROH title, leaned over, and was like, fuck the Revival. Like, that shit is genius. The Young Bucks, Bullet Club, they can do no wrong, man. Fuck the Revival. I'm a hashtag everything FTR, and I like the Revival, but the Movement's too strong right now.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So, yeah, the Revival, I mean, that match, let's go back. The match was good. I like the ending. Cool. The last 4 minutes were dope. You know, the count coming with time expiring, that's a good finish. That's a New Japan style finish. That's the G1 climax type shit.
Yeah, the only problem I have with Iron Man matches is they all end the same. They all end with, like, no matter who's up, like, yo, you could be up like 9 pinfalls, and it's going to end within like a pinfall. It's always going to end the same way. So it's like 30 minutes you just sitting there going, all right, when's this shit going to end? And then you're going to have this frantic finish, and they're all the same. So the match was cool. And the other thing about Great Balls of Fire, there was a lot of unintentional blood on this show.
Oh, there was a lot. Everyone was leaking, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of blood. Didn't Dean Ambrose bleed from the mouth? Matt Hardy bled from the eye?
Yep.
Strowman bled in the accident. Somebody else bled. Can't remember who. But whatever. Anyway, moving on.
And by the way, if I see an Iron Man match and someone wins like 5-0, that'd be the best shit ever.
That's what I'd like
to see. You just get skunked?
Yeah. I'd like to see somebody go out there and be like, yo, let's have an Iron Man match. And it'd be like 32-0. Like, I just want to see somebody just get smashed in an Iron Man match.
That is some shit you would book. That is Andreas Hale booking 101.
I'd make fans suffer through it all.
And just crush your baby face. That's how a heel gets over. When you have an Iron Man match and you just win 8-0.
Just a skunk. Just horrible. That's what I'd like to see.
What other match? Sasha Banks, Alexa Bliss. It's going into SummerSlam. Another Fatal 4-Way? Bayley and Nia Jax in the mix?
No, I hope not, actually. I kind of like the Banks and Bliss thing. I think that feud should continue, and I think Bayley needs to stay far, far away from the title picture. But it's always my argument. The division is so thin. We haven't even seen, like, Mickie James and Dana Brooke in a while. I don't even understand what they're doing with the women on Raw. But
Dana Brooke was on a pre-show getting talked to by fucking Emma. That's all I know.
So, I mean, I kind of like Bliss and Sasha just to go at it themselves because they have a pretty good feud. And not for nothing, you know, Banks has had the title a lot. She's the perfect person to make Alexa Bliss a little bit more legitimate as champion. Like, a lot of us want to see Sasha win and get the title back. That'd be great. But I'm kind of cool with Alexa Bliss being the champion. She's somebody who kind of needs the belt. It enhances her character.
I'm definitely all right with it for now. Like, it doesn't bother me. Broken Arm Bliss. That shit was beautiful.
Yeah, she's a great character. And nobody saw this coming from NXT. Thought she was too small and too light in the ass when she did her moves. But now she's a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, they give her a little bit of mean streak. They give her a weapon and shit. They let her fight outside the ring. And she wasn't like super healed out in NXT. This works. She always hits you with something if she can't beat you. The Miz versus Dean Ambrose, not fucking with that. and then we touched on everything else. Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns, Heath Slater, Curt Hawkins, all that stuff. What happened on SmackDown this week? Really not a damn thing.
Did anything happen? John Cena came back? Was that last week?
John Cena came back the 4th. Him and Rusev are just continuing their program.
That's right. See, I don't even care.
AJ Styles won the title in New York, in Madison Square Garden, in a dark match. Or not a dark match, but in a non-televised event.
I'm cool with that. I just, it's still kind of weird when shit like that happens because they do it and it's like, why did you choose that? And I get it because it's the Garden. Now what? I guess they feud and exchange the title?
I don't know. I don't know where Kevin Owens goes from here. Cena and AJ kind of had a weird looks in a program going on. I don't know what the hell Sami Zayn is doing. Baron Corbin and Knock are in a feud.
Something for Knock to do. I mean,
does nothing for me unless sooner or later you get the stipulation that they put the briefcase on a line.
So
Knock tells him to come up off that.
Not to go too deep into this because I don't feel like talking about SmackDown that much. But Baron Corbin, you know, I feel like he hasn't proven himself as a title contender. So, in a way, they kind of would want him to go over on Nakamura, but I feel like that's the worst-case scenario because I can't remember who it was. It might have been Daniel Bryan. It might have been somebody else. Was on a losing streak when they won the title. So, but Baron Corbin's in a weird spot because he looks like a guy that shouldn't lose. And what I mean by that is he doesn't have any other special parts of his character. He's not a great talker. He's not a great anything. So he has to win matches. But if he continues to lose, who cares? He's worse than like Jack Swagger with the damn thing. So it's like, but you can't go over on Nakamura because that makes absolutely no sense. So I don't know what they're doing putting these two together.
I'm at a loss. Yeah. I mean, listen, I don't know either. And that's the story of SmackDown right now, right? So Naomi's not even wrestling at the pay-per-view coming up because it's an elimination style match to see which woman gets the belt. And we just saw that shit on Raw. And it's not going to be better than the Sasha Nia Jax.
They're just, I don't know, man. When's the G1 Climax start?
We got like 2 weeks. Then you'll be fine. NXT, though, has been delivering good matches week after week after week. So that's held me over.
Roddy Fish?
Yeah, I mean, Roddy was really good in a championship match.
He was. Roderick Strong, he was good in ROH. He was even better in PWG as a heel. Strangely enough, though, I feel like they're not going to go back to this program. I don't know what they're doing. Maybe he interferes in that, what are they doing, Killian Dane and Drew McIntyre, the number one contender spot. Maybe he gets into that, but I don't think they should pull him out of the title picture. He's really good. Like, he's really fun to watch.
No, those backbreakers are really legit.
Oh, man, he's just really good at doing that shit.
That shit's so fun, right? Like, whenever he lands, what I was like, oh, that shit looks so fun.
NXT is in this weird spot, though. Like, okay, so you have the debut of Bobby Fish. Kyle O'Reilly's right behind him. Seems like Red Dragon forming is inevitable. What caught me off guard on NXT, which shouldn't have, but it did, I was like, oh, yeah, Johnny Gargano's feuding with Tommaso Ciampa. Like, it's been like weeks since they've really explored this, and now it's back.
Well, Ciampa tore his ACL.
Right, but it just felt weird that it was just like, oh, yeah. It's kind of the benefit of having a one-hour show. So when things come back around, you're like, man, it's kind of loaded here. This Brooklyn NXT pay-per-view is going to be really good.
Hopefully it's really longer because you have people like Andrade San Almas, who's been teasing like this love interest. Cool, and he loses and he doesn't care. I like the new angle. Cool. So you have him that you have to bring back. You have who else? Cassius Ohno and Hideo Itami are feuding.
That's going to be headed towards something.
Yeah, Aleister Black is feuding with no one.
No.
And you still have the whole fucking Sanity crew. Like, there's a lot of people to fit in, yo. Then Drew McIntyre still is there, and you just have so many people to fit into the show now.
It's the benefit of having a loaded roster, but then it's the detriment because then you got to try to fit all this great talent on the show.
Yeah, but then you got to go 2 hours. You got to go something. 2 hours isn't too much wrestling, by the way. It's not New Japan 6. It's not Raw 3. You know, 2 hours is okay. I'll watch 2 hours of NXT every week.
Yeah.
And be perfectly happy because I can watch that shit on my own pace. It's on demand. I got it. Like, give me 2 hours. At this point, you're bringing in 32 women for a tournament. You're going to have more women's matches. eventually when you sign half of them to contracts. Like, 2 hours are cool. The Velveteen Dream debut.
Who is it? Like, okay.
Who is a horrible version of Dalton Castle?
He's just a horrible character in itself. Like,
they should have never dropped his name. Just have him be known as the Velveteen Dream, but dropping, what, Patrick Clark or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, don't, his name is just the Velveteen Dream. Like, that's weird shit.
He just looks like a guy who's acting like Gold Dust. And Dalton Castle's, like, believable. Him, he just looks like somebody who's trying to play the part poorly.
Yeah, he looks fucking horrible. And his hair, how do you even get your hair like that, like a black man?
I don't know.
As a black man, how do you make your hair stand straight up on end?
A lot of white people products.
That shit's wild. I don't even know how you do it. That's a perm and a half he got going. I don't like the character either. But he's still someone that you have to fit in.
True.
So it's so deep. The tag team title picture. You know, we saw Heavy Machinery. The champions have barely been on television because you're trying to build so many fucking storylines. So Authors of Pain are sitting there. You're going to add Red Dragon to the mix. You got the, Street Profits or Street Poets or some shit?
What, Crime Time 2.0?
Yeah, ugh. Debuting. Even though I've seen, like, their highlights on house shows, they actually look pretty fucking funny.
But
the Crime Time angle, like, hopefully they don't make them, like, you know, just fucking bad guys. Like
criminals?
Make them criminals. Like, just let them be, you know, new generation black dudes where you just dance and do stupid shit.
I just want them to kick some ass. That's all. You don't have to be hooligans to kick ass.
No, don't be hooligans, but be like young, new wave, Lil Yachty ass type dudes.
Yeah, good luck.
Some wild shit. I feel like one of them carries a cup like he's sipping lean, though.
Very possible.
So, yeah. The black dude, he like tries not to, they're both black, but the little dude with waves tries not to spill his cup all the time. I think that shit sticked. They can't spill his lean, his drink. I don't know. We got to see what they do. That shit's going to be funny. So just ton of talent, man. NXT is stacked. We have that women's tournament coming up, which after like 2 spoilers last night at the live tapings, I was like, yo, I got to stop looking at these spoilers.
Oh, I didn't look at any of them.
Just pissing me off. Even though the Asian chick, who's like the equivalent of Asuka, she made her debut. She is dope. She's as advertised.
Well, I'll see you when it airs.
When it airs, of course. You don't do any type of spoilers. The finale is out here in Vegas, I read. So we got to get tickets or something to that. You got all the connections. You're the one who sits front row at NXT and shit.
I'll be there.
And stuff. I don't know what to tell you.
I'll be at this. I'm calling in a favor for that one.
Yeah. We got to, 2 tickets wouldn't hurt. Leave your boy out in the wind. See, that's people who don't know us in real life and just listen to podcasts. They always do me so dirty, people. So we'll be like, oh, yo, we're going to do this. And then, like, Marcus Vanderberg will come in town. And he'll be like, yo, Kel, well, me and Marcus are going to this. I'll be like, you and Marcus? Like, yo, Kel, you want to come? I buy my ticket. I'm, like, in the nosebleeds. Him and Marcus are on the fucking cage side. That's how it was at ROH. They're ringside patting on the thing. I'm 4 levels up.
Oh, but we bought the tickets for that. You were just late. I don't know what happened to you for that.
I wasn't offered the group invitation to buy tickets.
Yes, you were.
I was not. See, you got... Yo, people, they just do me so dirty. All the time. Like, yo, so we're sitting here. You and AJ, this is 2 times at ROH.
Yeah, that was me and AJ. Like, Ryan was sitting at the top.
I sat next to Ryan.
Exactly. So that wasn't... Yo, y'all didn't want to pay for the tickets or whatever the case was. So that's what
happened. I may have been broke at that time. This time you get a pass. I may have been in jail and it took all my money.
All right. So there we have it. That's the show.
But other than that, I'm trying to make sure it don't happen again. That's what I'm saying. Like, come on. I need to be front row too. A boy could use some perks. Let me be on TV. I want to be like Kaz in the fucking videos when they always show the women's title match with Sasha and Bayley. And Kaz is just wilding out. Second row.
So him and my boy Jeff were there. That was crazy.
Yeah. Come on, man. I need to be on a DVD somewhere. Yeah.
We're really meta right now because, like, people listening to the show are like, what the fuck are they talking about?
That's all right. Shit happens.
Yeah.
Listen, this is what people come for. This is what it is. So that's our show for this week. I have to go to the NBA Summer League. Andreas got to go write 1 million articles, I'm sure. Make sure you guys follow us on social media at The Corner LSN on all platforms. Me at Kel Dansby. Him at Old Man Andreas. OLDMAN Andreas.
That's never going to happen.
Yo, when you see a parody account next week with your face on it, it happens.
Well, don't, then it will happen.
Don't doubt the Corner Club. They'll make that shit real quick. So until then, though, next week, check back in. Right now, we're out.
Peace.